Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. It's Friday, January 5th, 2018. We are all covered in snow here on the East Coast. And joining me, not to discuss the snow more so much as to discuss the wild card round of the NFL playoffs this year, is CBS's Will Brinson. Will, how is Charlotte at the moment?
Well, I'm in Raleigh, but it's a difference.
I'm
not offended. It's weird. They're actually not that close. It makes going to like Panthers games difficult, but but we get the same sort of weather, and it is freezing. I am recording this. I know you can't see me, but I'm recording this wearing a giant puff coat and a poofball hat, and there is roughly 1 millimeter of snow in my front yard right now, and we got maybe like a half inch, and schools have been closed for 2 days. So that's exciting.
You know what? That's charming, though. I'm not one of those people who is like, oh, you guys don't have any snow infrastructure. It's fun. It's cool to see people freak out over snow. So happy for you guys. Sorry to the fine people of Raleigh, though.
No, it's fine. By the way, people who are listening and don't know about Raleigh and snow, need to just Google, and you should do this when you get done if you've never seen it, Bill. Mm-hmm. Google Raleigh snowstorm and look at the first image that pops up. I swear to you, it is not a Photoshop. It is utter chaos. There's cars burning. there's like cars everywhere on the road. This happened in 2014, and my mother, it was like 2 miles from my house. It's incredible. But people should Google Raleigh snowstorm. There's some memes out there. There's like a stormtrooper. Stay puff, man. But the actual cars burning was.
That's really impressive. Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
That's Glenwood Avenue, and I promise you, it's 2 miles from my house.
That's incredible. All right, let's get going to these NFL playoffs, which seemed like they were going to be pretty boring. I'm not going to lie, seemed pretty chalky until we got to the final moments of the final game of the NFL regular season, and suddenly, out of nowhere, we had the most surprising playoff team. Maybe the Rams are the most surprising playoff team, but I would say the most surprising playoff team in the AFC in recent memory, which is the Buffalo Bills, who I have to admit, well, I don't remember all of your playoff predictions. If you had Jags-Bills in the first round, I tip my cap to you. You should be running the NFL. But if you did not, it's still fine. We can still talk about Jaguars-Bills. I think a really interesting matchup for Buffalo in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because I'm pretty sure I took the under on both of those teams at 6.5 games each, respectively, and they blew them out of the water. The Bills actually looked like they could cover that under at one point in time when they famously or infamously, I guess, switched to Nathan Peterman against the Chargers. As you and others have pointed out, I mean, it almost cost them a playoff berth because of a tiebreaker with the Chargers. But the Titans won, and then the Bengals won. The Jaguars haven't hosted a playoff game since 1999. And the Bills fans have been donating $17 increments to Tyler Boyd and Andy Dalton because the Bills haven't been to the playoffs in 17 years. I mean, it is just as a surprising. It's more surprising. It is the most surprising thing about the 2017 NFL season, and yet it somehow sort of lost because it fits with the narrative of this wholesale change in the playoffs. I mean, the Eagles won in the NFC, the Vikings are two, the Rams are three, you know, the Bills and the Jaguars are playing each other in a playoff game. I think that you have to give Sean McDermott a lot of credit for the job that he did. And in fact, if he hadn't made that switch to Peterman midway through the season, I think we'd really be talking about him as a coach of the year candidate. Mm-hmm. Doug Marrone deserves credit. I don't know what the Bills do well or what they have in terms of an advantage over other teams when they get out on the field. And I think that makes this a very interesting scenario for them going into Jacksonville against a team that I think will probably not be like the Bills should be playing loose. The Jaguars should be playing tight. The Jaguars are a better team. The Bills might be missing LeSean McCoy, and yet there is a Spidey sense type of situation here about an overwhelmed Bills team being 9-point underdogs to a Blake Bortles-led Jaguars team.
That does seem interesting, right? If I told you before the season, hey, the Jags are going to make the playoffs, you'd say, okay, well, you know, sure, I could see it. AFC South is pretty weak. You know, defense is pretty good. Could see some people taking a step forward. Leonard Fournette's great. All those things are plausible. If I told you the Jags were going to be 9-point favorites in the whole wild card round, I think you'd have a lot of questions for me about what happened in 2017. I don't think this is a bad line necessarily, but I do think the most plausible story for how the Bills win this game and how the Bills have won most of their games this year is totally plausible in terms of what might happen in this game, which is the Bills want to run the football. The Bills want to create interceptions on defense and create turnovers and get short fields that way. And they want to protect the football and not turn the ball over on offense. And that's a plausible story with this Jags team, which, of course, 26th ranked run defense by DVOA. So even after acquiring Marcell Dareus, their run defense was still the thing you could kind of do to them, where you weren't going to be able to throw the ball very well, especially to your wide receivers, which the Bills don't throw to their wide receivers all that much anyway. But you can run the ball on them. So if you have Shady McCoy, which obviously is a major question mark, and that stinks, I don't think it's fair to stick to this matchup without LeSean McCoy for Bills fans. You're going to be able to run the football. And then on top of that, you're facing Blake Bortles, who 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago was playing great, playing lights out football, best quarterback in football level football for a 3 week stretch. The last two games, he has 5 interceptions. And granted, one of them was basically a Hail Mary, not a Hail Mary, but like an interception with 15 seconds left, at the end of week 17, a pretty meaningless play, but 4 meaningful interceptions over the last 2 weeks, which, you know, I don't know which Blake Bortles is going to show up. I mean, if we get the Blake Bortles who isn't really very good and makes a bunch of mistakes, well, the Bills could kind of make some hay with those takeaways there.
Yeah, and I think the last two. So if you look at the Jaguars since the bye, it is a good line, and my initial instinct was to take the Bills. I actually ultimately in our picks decided to lay the points, and I know I'm going to regret it. If you look at the Jaguars since the bye, they played the Bengals, the Chargers, the Colts, the Seahawks, and the Texans. That is a mixed bag of teams, and mostly bad teams, with the Chargers maybe being the only exception. The Seahawks weren't really that in the game. They sort of got dominated until Russell Wilson did his Russell Wilson fourth quarter thing. In those 5 games, the Jaguars won by a total of 83 points. I mean, that's not an unsubstantial number to win 5 football games by in the second half. And if you look at their, you know, they beat the Browns on the road after the bye, but they lost to the Cardinals on the road. They lost to the 49ers on the road, and they lost to the Titans. So I think there's a tale of two teams here, right? It's a team that has struggled. I mean, they only beat the Browns 19-7. They're a better team than the Browns, a much better team than the Browns. Like we said, they lost to the Cardinals. And the last 2 weeks are concerning, though, for me, because, one, they go to San Francisco and they just get lit up by Jimmy Garoppolo. Yes. And they climb back into the game, but ultimately they gave up 44 points by far. Well, not by far. They gave up 37 to the Titans, I guess, in week 2. But I mean, you know, they gave up a lot of points to the 40. And it wasn't supposed to happen. You know, the Jaguars weren't supposed to get a 40-burger dropped on them. And then in week 17, they go into Tennessee, and despite saying we're going to play all of our players, they lose 15-10. Now, 15-10 is not a horrible score, but if you're trying to snuff out a division rival and you can't do it and you can't muster more than 10 points against the Titans and you can't win a football game because you're trailing 15-10, well, two of these two games provide a formula or at least an explanation for how the Bills could win the game. Now, to flip the narrative on its head, you can argue that in bowl season fashion, the Jaguars didn't, the 49ers, neither of those games mattered. I mean, the 49ers, they'd already clinched the division when they knew they'd clinched the division because Tennessee had lost earlier in the day to the Rams when they kicked off against the 49ers. And against Tennessee in week 17, you know, you can talk about motivation to mess up a division rival all you want, but they, I mean, nothing, whether they won or lost, their three seed was entirely unaffected. They couldn't catch the Steelers at two, and they couldn't fall back to the Chiefs at four. In mm-hmm. fact, it was a curious decision to play their players.
Yeah.
And I don't, I mean, like, I don't know, like, if that Blake Bortles shows up and the Bills can stop Leonard Fournette from running, and he's not, I mean, he hadn't been great in the second half of the season running uh-huh. the ball, uh-huh. they can win this game.
They can, I think, for sure. I mean, it's definitely plausible they can win this game. But let me ask you, and I think this is the tough question if you're a Bills fan, can they do it without Shady McCoy, either Shady on the field altogether or Shady on the field at 75% with that ankle injury?
At 75%, I will say that they have a puncher's chance. If Shady McCoy doesn't play and they have to Mike Tolbert's their running back, it's game over. I mean, it's just, I mean, I love, I think Tyrod Taylor's underrated. You know, I get that I think that the Bills have made, and I say I use this phrase a lot, but they made chicken salad out of something less appetizing this season. You know, their defense is going to attempt to make Blake Bortles move the ball methodically down the field. Yep. And the Jaguars offense, you know, aside from the Blake Bortles jokes, and as we learned from our friend Kevin Clark, Blake Bortles doesn't like those jokes. Actually, Blake Bortles doesn't care about the jokes. Everybody else hates the jokes. You know, they're not exactly loaded at wide receiver. Like, they have talent. Allen Hurns might be coming back. Marquise Lee is up in question. Dede Westbrook is an enormous talent. Keelan Cole is somebody that maybe DFS players know.
Mm-hmm.
They're not loaded at wide receiver. Like, we talk about inexperience in the playoffs. Well, the Jaguars have a lot of it, especially at that position, at running back. You know, there are questions about how many points this offense can score. I think that if you were to tell a Jaguars fan that they won comfortably and won by 14 or more points, they would presume that the defense at least scored one touchdown.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's not out of the question that could happen. I mean, last week, of course, they were doing nothing on offense against Tennessee. Suddenly, they have Derrick Henry and Marcus Mariota, I believe, run into one another. Yannick Ngakoue is there. It's a touchdown. And suddenly, it's a one-score game with a few minutes to go. Is this a Marcell Dareus revenge game or a revenge on Marcell Dareus game?
I love a good defensive tackle revenge game. I think it's definitely a Marcell Dareus revenge game because, and don't get me wrong, the Bills have reason to want revenge on Marcell Dareus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you draft a guy in the best one of the three best drafts of the last 30 years,
right?
And you take him above
J.J.
Watt, A.J. Green, Robert Quinn, name any of these guys you want. And you end up having to trade him for peanuts on the dollar after mm-hmm. you gave him a huge contract extension. Yes, you should want revenge on him. But I think because he is the one, I think there's always more player motivation. And I believe I saw somebody interviewed him, whether it was ESPN or NFL Network. And he's like, yeah, they traded me. They dumped me. They hated me. You know, they got rid of it. It's like, well, they did pay you a lot of money. They did put up with some shenanigans and hijinks of the law, non-law abiding nature. And I think it's a Marcell Dareus revenge game. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him motivated at the idea of disrupting things on the interior for the Bills.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think he could play a meaningful role in this game. Of course, the Bills do have a very solid interior offensive line, but it's going to be tough, especially without Shady, especially without the guy who single-handedly, you know, can carry this offense for stretches of time. Throw more stat out there.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, do you think that there's any chance the Bills are, quote-unquote, just happy to be there?
I mean, maybe. But is there any chance the Jags are just happy to be there?
Maybe. I would think that Jacksonville is – I can't tell if it's a good thing or bad thing that the Jaguars might have motivation. Like, I can't tell the Jaguars would have motivation for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, prove everybody wrong because we look so bad.
It's not out of the question. I think it was actually probably, you know, in the long run, pretty good for them. Maybe to have to struggle a little bit over the final 2 weeks, but we'll see. I mean, if it ends up eroding Blake Bortles' confidence, then it wouldn't have been the case, but it'll be a really interesting game. This could go a lot of different ways, but it sounds like you're laying the points and you're taking the Jags -9.
Yeah, and I don't feel good about it. I mean, I know that another person that you know who does a podcast and talks about lines has often mentioned that it would be insane to, like, this is, don't get fooled in the last few weeks heading into the playoffs and talk yourself into laying points with Blake Bortles. But I think that the way that it was a perfect storm for doing it because of the Bills getting in and Shady McCoy getting hurt. And, you know, it's just tough to, I think it's just tough to, it's tough not to take the points. It's tough not to lay the points because the Jaguars are substantially a better team.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm still taking the Bills. I don't know if I just can't lay 9 points with Blake Bortles in the playoffs. I just can't do it. You know what? And I might regret it. I think I can see a late touchdown for the Jags on defense, but it's tough for me to take the Jags here. What about the other AFC matchup, which is Tennessee, Kansas City? The Chiefs are 8-point favorites at home, and like the Bills, they are down a running back in DeMarco Murray, who appears to be out probably for the remainder of the postseason. But the difference is with the Bills, Shady McCoy missing is a huge hindrance. I'm going to ask you what you think, but I know in my opinion, I think the Tennessee Titans might actually be better with DeMarco Murray sidelined.
Oh, yeah, I was queuing up. Are we sure it's not an upgrade question? It's definitely an upgrade. I think Derrick Henry's the more explosive. I mean, look, it's great to have both guys, but it feels like this season, it feels like this has sort of been a up and down season for DeMarco Murray in a season that's been up and down, like in a career that's been up and down, right? Like this is sort of how DeMarco Murray works. One year he leads the league rushing with the Cowboys. You know, the next he's at the Eagles and he's struggling, and then he gets his, you know, revenge season with the Titans, and now he's down a little bit. I think Henry just has the fresher legs, is younger, is healthy, and makes more sense as the feature back for the Titans, and they're better off with it. It is interesting to note that the Kansas City Chiefs are 32nd in rush DVOA defense, according to, and by the way, the Bills are 31st. worth noting there too. But it is rare when you see a team that is, to me, substantially better in Kansas City than its opponent in Tennessee, and yet the Chiefs' single biggest weakness aligns perfectly with the Titans' single biggest strength, which is running the football. I think Tennessee Titans have to run the ball well here, Bill, in order, and they have to run the ball well, and they have to run it out of the gate well, and they have to play defense well out of the gate and limit Travis Kelce down the field, Tyreek Hill down the field, because if the Chiefs get up 14-0 in this game, it's over. It ends up being 30-0, and Marcus Mariota has 50 passing attempts for 4.7 yards per attempt. Derrick Henry has 8 carries for 28 yards, and Andy Reid and the Chiefs roll. If the Titans can play defense early and stop Alex Smith from throwing the ball down the field and scoring points early on them, or, you know, certainly prevent a kickoff return for points, then I think they can establish the run, slog this game down, play some defense, and I think the same formula kind of applies to the Bills and the Titans. They have to make this an ugly slop fest. Drag the superior team down to your level, and, you know, get this to the third quarter in a 14-7 game where all of a sudden the home crowd is nervous, you know, sort of squeezing butts, and then you kind of just make some magic happen.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not crazy to think that could happen, too. I mean, you could certainly say universe where it is the third quarter, it's Tennessee 13, Kansas City 10, Alex Smith completes a 3-yard pass on 3rd and 12, and the home crowd is booing, and we're cutting to shots of Patrick Mahomes on the sidelines, who he wasn't great in week 17, but he wasn't bad. There were a couple plays where he looked like he was on another universe, another level from anyone else in the field, but there were plays where he looked like the bad Blake Bortles too. I could see this being a game where it's a lot of long possessions where you mentioned Tennessee being able to run the football. On the flip side, this is a Tennessee defense that ranks third in DVOA against deep passes. So you'd hope they'd be able to kind of take away some of that Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce down the field stuff, but they are dead last. They are 32nd in DVOA against short passes. So this could be a game where Alex Smith is really able to move the ball in kind of that traditional Alex Smith way, in sort of 7-8 yard completions down the field, safe throws, throws that are going to be, you know, taking up time and controlling the clock, controlling the football without ever really risking the possibility of a takeaway.
Yeah, and pardon me, I was saying that Mahomes is tantalizing. I don't know why I felt the need to. But you look at the Chiefs, right? And you talk about those long drives. The Chiefs rank sixth in yards per drive on offense and sixth in points per drive on offense and first in turnovers in terms of less turnovers being good, obviously, in this case, 0.070 turnovers per drive this season. Just ahead of the Patriots, who were 0.072. And I think that that's a huge deal because in the same way, in the reverse way that the Bills are going to hope to make the Jaguars chunk down the field in short chunks and not make mistakes, right? Like, all right, let's just sit back and don't give up a big play and make Blake Bortles not make a mistake. I think that the Chiefs can say, all right, listen, you know, we're going to sit here and dink and dunk you down the field. You talk about the Titans stink. We talk about the strength on weaknesses. Well, the Chiefs' strength is dink and dunking short yardage, and the Titans, you know, weakness is giving it up. And so it wouldn't be surprising to see Alex Smith, you know, dink, dunk, dink, dunk, and then you take a shot over the top. I mean, that's a formula as old as football. And the Chiefs have the weapons to do that in terms of being creative out of the box, you know, with Kelsey out of the wildcat, you know, running motion, confusing the fairly young, inexperienced defense, you know, that has done a good job acclimating to Dick LeBeau's scheme. And then all of a sudden you go up top to Tyreek Hill and he's wide open. What happened against the Chargers in that pivotal week 15 game, I think it was, where, you know, eventually it's just Tyreek Hill's wide open down the sideline and all of a sudden you're stunned and it throws your game plan offensively.
Yeah, and again, that's totally plausible that could happen. And on top of that, you think about what happened to Tennessee in Week 16. They had the Todd Gurley MVP game, where he destroyed Tennessee both on the ground, but especially in the passing game, 118 yards on the ground, 158 yards and 2 scores as a receiver. And Kareem Hunt might not be Todd Gurley, but he's pretty good. And he seems to be going back to his early season run of form over the final couple weeks of the year since Matt Nagy's been installed as OC. So could see a scenario here where I think Kareem Hunt has a big game with screens as a receiver and then as a running back as well. He also sat out most of week 17, so is pretty fresh for the playoffs here. And the other thing is, I guess, is the weak spot for Kansas City. It's not just their running game, but also the guy who starts across from Marcus Peters. It was Steven Nelson. He played 100% of snaps in week 16. Darrell Revis, he's more the slot guy. Darrell Revis played 84% of the snaps as the starting cornerback on the outside. Last week, it was Terrence Mitchell again playing 100% of the snaps. I don't know who it's going to be at this point. It could change from week to week, from series to series. But whoever it is going to be a weakness. And this would be a spot where you would hope that Tennessee is able to get some of their athletes at receiver matched up one-on-one. Maybe this is a game where we do see something out of Corey Davis. Maybe it's a game where Eric Decker, you know, is able to make some hay, where Rishard Matthews is able to create a mismatch and make some plays. But you would figure that was going to be a spot where Tennessee, you know, given how much they invested in wide receiver this offseason, you would hope you'd be able to exploit a mismatch on the outside if you're the Titans.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, Kareem Hunt from week 6 through week 12 had a total of, and this is not a horrible total, but it's, you know, like 521 scrimmage yards, right?
Okay.
And then from week 13 to week 15, he had over 440, I think it was. I mean, like,
yeah,
this is when they made that change with Matt Nagy as offensive coordinator, started feeding him. I wonder. And not to go back to the Kareem Hunt thing, but A, do you think that there was any purposeful attempt to limit his midseason touches in hopes of saving him down the stretch and for the playoffs? And B, did Kareem Hunt retake the lead for Offensive Rookie of the Year over Alvin Kamara or no?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the same thing kind of happened with some extent to Todd Gurley, where I think the Rams, you know, kind of kept him quiet for October and November, and then really went back to him heavy in December. when I went through it for my awards column, I chose Kamara, and I felt like he was the I felt like the difference in terms of volume was more than accounted for by Kamara's efficiency and big plays and touchdown rate. I wouldn't be mad if he chose either of them, and I wouldn't be. I think that, you know, if he'd been that same guy from week one to week five all year, I think he'd be the MVP, let alone offensive rookie of the year. But I thought it was inevitable that he wasn't going to be that guy. He had some crazy amount of, like, ridiculously 60, 70, 80 yard touchdowns through the first few weeks of the year, which, they just can't, you can't keep that up week after week. And this is, in a way, almost more sustainable and more efficient over the past few weeks.
Yeah, he had six touchdowns in the first 5 weeks, was averaging 6.3 yards per attempt rushing and 10.4 yards per catch. Maybe not 9.7 yards, 9.76 yards per target. Maybe not sustainable.
Right. Yeah. So
I would go with Kamara too. I just thought it was interesting that Hunt's push down the stretch was, it certainly brought him back into the mix. Mm-hmm. And I am here for a one rushing attempt, 35 rushing yard, seal the rushing title day by Kareem Hunt in week 17.
Yeah. I guess I wonder this. If Tennessee loses this game, and if they lose it, you know, by 8 points, if chalk happens and they lose, what would it be?
8.5.
Yeah. Oh, 8.5 now. Excuse me. So it'd be 26. Let's say 26-18. Let's just say straight up chalk. Do you think they will fire Mike Mularkey? Do you think they should fire Mike Mularkey?
If they lose by the exact spread, I don't know the answer to that. I think I keep harking back to 2015 when the Texans, an AFC South team that was, got in, I believe they got in as a wild card that year, and were playing, or maybe they won the divisions. No, they couldn't have. Weren't they playing in Kansas City in 2015? Why is my memory? I remember it was the 4:30 game on Saturday. Anyway, Chiefs blew out the Texans 30-0 is my point. And after that game, the Texans were so shell-shocked that they went out and signed Lamar Miller, signed Brock Osweiler. I mean, they'd gone nuts.
Yes.
Right? I mean, like that's how, like, they'd been stunned so badly that they went out and signed Brock Osweiler to a $73 million contract. I mean, like that. So I think that if the Chiefs blow out the Titans and the Titans look completely lethargic on offense, they will fire Mike Mularkey, because I just think it's one of those things where the NFL is so reactionary that if you just get blasted in the playoffs, that you fire your coach who was already on the hot seat, especially with a guy, Josh McDaniels, out there, probably, obviously still going to be available. You won't have signed with another team by Monday or whatever, or Tuesday. Right. And I just see Tuesday afternoon news that Mularkey's been fired after meeting with John Robinson, who's going to pursue other options. So to answer your specific question, I think they're still going to do it if they lose. Mm-hmm. I don't think he wants to fire Mike Mularkey, but I think that if you look at the situation, and it reminds me so much of the Panthers in 2015 and 2016, where, Mike Shula just caught, just couldn't feel his face calling plays in 2015, and the Panthers got this hot run and the offense looked so good, and then you see this regression in 2016. Well, in 2016, the Titans just, Mike Mularkey couldn't feel his face. And this has been a struggle for Marcus Mariota, who's been injured. You have to question, Marcus Mariota is too talented a quarterback to be regressing the way that he regressed and to play the way that he played and to play in the system he's playing in. And there's too much talent on that team to be middling the way they were this year. So to me, I think that if they lose this game and the offense does not look inspiring, then Mike Mularkey's gone.
Wow. I mean, I can't say I disagree. Now, it's tough. In paper, firing a 9-7 head coach who made the playoffs for the first time in a while with this team, it's not the pedigree of a guy who gets fired, but I do think at the end of the day, this is an organization that has to develop Marcus Mariota into their franchise quarterback, and Ken Wisenhunt wasn't doing it, so Ken Wisenhunt was fired, and now it doesn't look like Mike Mularkey's doing it. And I think, I don't know the change you make at quarter, with the head coach. I don't know who the next guy should be, but I'll be interested to see the choices they make, because they've now hired, and if they fire Mularkey, fired two offensive-minded coaches. But Definitely a really interesting matchup for Tennessee's future here. And we will see. What is your line here?
I'm taking the Chiefs. I think I'm heavy chalk on this AFC side. I'm going to regret both of them. I know. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the game that the Titans can keep close. I think either of these games can be won by the underdog, and I think both underdogs can keep it close. And then that sounds stupid. I'm like, anything can happen. But I do think it is entirely plausible that both Jacksonville and Kansas City win 31-7. So I'm taking chalk.
Mm-hmm. Well, those would both be the under as well if they end up at 31-7.
I think there will be low scoring blowouts by the favorite.
Oof. That would not be fun. I'm hoping that it's not accurate. Well, I don't like to pick against your picks. I feel like that would be a boring set of AFC games, but we will see. Very interesting pair of matchups in a lot of ways. We'll get to the NFC after the break here on the Bill Barnwell Show in a moment. But first, now, I don't know if there are any people out there where it's perhaps a couple, pair of brothers, brother, sister. I don't know if there's any groups of people out there and who you're friends with, who happen to be Bills and Jags fans. I don't know how that could work. Maybe you grew up in Buffalo, you moved to Jacksonville because it was too cold, you maybe had a soft spot for the Jags, but your brother is a big Bills fan, decided to stick with the Buffalo team even after the move. There has to be at least one group of people out there where they have a Buffalo jersey and a Jacksonville jersey somewhere in a closet in their house. This is the weekend for you. I can say pretty confidently, you may never get another Bills-Jags playoff game for the rest of your life, or before the NFL implodes. Either of those things. Before the heat death of the sun, there may not be another Buffalo Bills-Jacksonville Jaguars playoff game. So if this is your chance, I would advise you take advantage of it. And I'm assuming you did not get tickets in expectations there would be a Bills-Jags wild card round game in advance before the season. Here's the good news. You can get tickets for that game now, as well as any other NFL playoff game this year, with our partners at SeatGeek. And you know how SeatGeek works, but if you don't, SeatGeek does an incredible job of aggregating tickets from all over the web, and then they use their proprietary deal score technology to rate those tickets. So you're not getting ripped off on your Jags-Bills tickets. You're getting a good deal on those Jaguars-Bills tickets. And right now, even better, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase by using my promo code. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code Barnwell when you make your purchase today. That's promo code Barnwell for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase, whether it's Bills-Jags, whether it's Falcons-Rams, any of the games you want to go see this weekend or any point going forward, use the SeatGeek app and enter in my promo code Barnwell for $20 off your first purchase today. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined by CBS's Will Brinson. Got to the AFC before the break, and now let's finish up with the NFC. And let's get to your home team. Well, let's get to the Carolina Panthers, who are 7-point favorites. Excuse me, now they were 6.5 when I took these notes. 7-point underdogs. Did I say favorites? Saints are the 7-point favorites. I know betting, guys. Come on. 7-point favorites, the Saints at home. 47.5 point total, for the New Orleans Saints hosting the Carolina Panthers, who, of course, have lost twice to the New Orleans Saints this year. So, Will, do you make anything of the idea that it's tough to beat a team three times in the same season?
I do, Bill. I think it is difficult to beat the same team three times, and I don't care what the stats and the match. I just think it's hard. I mean, I think for reasons outside of the realm of the conceptual, as sure. in motivation and game sure. planning, stuff like Reasonable. That. I think it's tough to do, right? I mean, the Panthers know that they've been embarrassed at home and away by the Saints twice this season, and they will be motivated to show up and play hard. On the same token, in the same motivational vein, I guess, the Panthers should have been motivated to dominate the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
And they did. And they needed a last second fumble recovery touchdown by Cam Newton in order to beat the Buccaneers and clinch a playoff spot. And they should have been even more motivated to beat the Falcons in week 17 in Atlanta, because doing so would have given them a shot to get a home playoff game and win the division. And in fact, they would have won the division if they'd beaten the Falcons. And they didn't, I don't want to say they didn't show up, but they did not look like a team that is capable of going to New Orleans and beating a very good Saints team that, to me, I think when you look at the Panthers, I think this, and maybe I'm crazy. I don't think, I'm not comparing the Panthers to the last Ravens Super Bowl winning team, but I think that with Cam Newton and the upside that he has at quarterback and with the upside they have on defense and with the various way that they're built in terms of not having a lot of, you know, great weapons in the passing game. And I mean, you know, that Ravens team had Anquan Boldin who went scorched earth in the playoffs, just like Joe Flacco. I think the Panthers have that upside to go nuclear and win the next three games. And, and Cam Newton looks like the MVP from 2015. But I also think they have the downside of walking into New Orleans and losing 34-10 because they are built. They are, this particular version of this Panthers team is built in the opposite way that the Saints are. The Saints have multiple ways to beat you. They can beat you by running the ball. They can beat you in the short passing game with Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram. They can beat you down the field with Michael Thomas. They can beat you defensively, both on the defensive line and in the secondary. And that doesn't even really point out that Drew Brees, a future Hall of Fame quarterback, and who had a sneaky good season, but not a monster number season, is their quarterback. The Panthers have this. I think the Panthers are like a toddler on a balance beam. And Cam Newton doesn't play well, they're going to topple one way, and they're not. It's going to be ugly, and it's going to be a a toddler lying in mulch or the sand or whatever it is on the playground screaming. And people wondering if there's a broken arm. And if Cam walks the balance beam perfectly, then the Panthers can win this game.
To be clear, I understand the metaphor. I don't want to endorse that metaphor as a way to test your family's playoff viability. Please do not put your toddler on a balance beam. That is a request from the show.
Straight, yeah.
But let me say this, and I agree with you in terms of the idea that there is definitely something, you know, mental and motivational about having to beat a team three times and losing to the same team three times. You don't want that to happen. What I will say, though, the thing that I wonder about this game is it wasn't like the first two games were close games. I mean, if it were a situation where in week three the Panthers, you know, missed the last second field goal and lost by two, and then in week 13, you know, the Saints got a big first down with a minute left to pull out a three-point win, you say, okay, well, you know, those are close games. You think a break here, a break there. Panthers could have won both those games themselves. I mean, these were games that weren't really close. They blew out Carolina in week three to announce the coming of that new incredible defense. And then week 13, 31-21, even that took a late touchdown from Carolina to make it close. It was 31-14 with 4 minutes left in the game. So I guess my question, Will, is what's going to change? I mean, if this is just a bad matchup for Carolina, what's going to be different this time around to give Carolina a shot at home or on the road in New Orleans?
Yeah, and I think your point is a very good point, particularly with the week three game. And you'll recall, I mean, anybody who watched football this season will remember that in week two, the Saints, who had just been blown out by the Vikings in week one, hosted the New England Patriots and gave up 36 points and got manhandled by the Patriots. The Patriots team coming off a loss. I mean, God, how long ago did this feel? Patriots coming off a loss at home to the Chiefs in week one, go to New Orleans in week two, and destroy the Saints. And the Saints defense for the first 2 weeks of the season gave up 65 points combined. I mean, it looked like time is a flat circle situation where the Saints defense was going to be terrible. And then they go into Carolina and they only give up 13 points. I mean, the Panthers were primed to crush the Saints in that game. The way that, the Panthers were 2-0. They hadn't looked great, but it started running the ball effectively. And Cam Newton was coming back and sort of getting worked in from shoulder surgery. Saints weren't doing a great job of protecting Drew Brees, and the defense wasn't good.
Yeah.
And then they picked Cam Newton three times. I do think when you look back at that game, a lot of what happened to me was a result of some poor play calling by Mike Shula and some very vanilla and pattern mistakes in terms of what they called. And that is important in two ways. One, Mike Shula is still the coordinator.
Yeah.
And two, when we talk about the difficulty in beating a team three times in one season, I think the familiarity helps the Saints. The fact that, like, now the Panthers have to be different in their approach. They have to do things differently because Sean Payton's a very good coach. For all the quirks and bizarre things, you know, the choking at Devonta Freeman and carrying the contract around in his briefcase and all the weird bounty gate and all the stuff that's happened, he's a very good coach. And he is, especially, you know, offensively. And I think that, you know, what they've done defensively, you know, Dennis Allen has turned that defense around, and they know this Panthers team. Mm-hmm. And what you saw in that Week 3 game was the Panthers ran the ball really – they were averaging over 5 yards per carry on their first drive, and then all of a sudden they kind of puckered up in the red zone, and Cam you know, got tense, and they started running plays that the Saints had seen a million times, and the Saints players were jumping routes. So in order for the Panthers to beat the Saints this week, Mike Shula has to outsmart the Saints coaching staff, and I don't think it's going to Well, the other thing, Bill, too, on the coaching front, Steve Wilks, who has done a tremendous job with the Panthers' defense this year, I don't want to say dings against him, but one, he's being considered for a lot of head coaching vacancies. Yep. I don't care what anybody says. I think that weighs on you as a coordinator.
It has to.
Like, if you and I are not, to be clear, are not looking for other jobs, but if somebody came to you and was like, hey, are you interested in this job? Are you spending 0% of your time thinking about that other job? Or are you spending some percent, you know, it takes away some of your brain power. Like, your brain, good luck controlling the human brain and blocking out everything, okay? Unless you're a cyborg named Bill Belichick, who's probably going to double down this week. and the other thing with Wilks, as a play caller, the Panthers have really made hay this year by being super aggressive. I think they blitzed on 44.7% of their plays this year. That's a lot of plays. 25% roughly is the NFL average.
Yep.
And the Saints have the perfect weapons to counteract the blitz in terms of Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram in screen passes and short passes and all those things that can really exploit a team that is aggressive in the blitz. So I just think the matchup from a coaching perspective and a philosophy perspective is bad, and that's why the Panthers have gotten smoked twice this year, and they're going to get smoked a third time.
Well, it's funny. I wanted to bring that up as well from the opposite perspective, because Carolina right now, you mentioned 44%. They are 31st. Or sorry, they're second in terms of blitz rate. Number three in that category are the New Orleans Saints, who blitz 37.7% of the time, a big drop-off in terms of blitz rate. They don't blitz anywhere near as frequently, but when they don't blitz, they have the sixth lowest pressure rate in football, which, you know, if they don't blitz, they're going to have to hold up in coverage, which they have in the past. But, you know, again, not clear that it's always going to be able to be the case. And if they do blitz and don't get home, well, then suddenly you have Cam running free. You have Christian McCaffrey in a mismatch against whichever linebacker is going to be in coverage, whether it's Craig Robertson, whether it's Manti Te'o. You know, you're going to have a mismatch there. So I think you're going to need all hands on deck for Carolina in this game. You're going to have to get a big game from McCaffrey. You're going to have to get Greg Olsen involved and have him play well, which he's had one game all year where he's been a meaningful factor, that Packers game for Carolina. And it's not out of the question. I mean, this Carolina team, they have stretches where they look dominant. They look great for most of that game against the Vikings, who are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And that was surrounded by games where they struggled against the Jets, struggled against the Bucks, struggled against the Packers for stretches. Looked ugly against the Falcons. I mean, this is a team that is very inconsistent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So it sounds like you're taking the Saints here, Will.
Yeah, and one more thing on the Panthers. I the Panthers have to play the perfect game. Mm-hmm. I think the fact Cam Newton is their quarterback and his perfect game can be so much better.
Right.
And I mean, even if Cam plays a perfect football game, it's almost better than Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady in a weird way because of his running ability. Like he's never going to put up the pinpoint passing and all of that. But when Cam is Cam, he is he's pretty unstoppable, right? I mean, is that easy to say?
No, for sure.
And then the other thing that I think is a ding against the Panthers, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but I did a radio spot locally on Monday and asked, you know, local radio, you would think would know. I didn't know the answer until I looked it up. But can you get 5 wide receivers on the Panthers depth chart right now?
Oh God.
You get 3 of them, and if you get the 4th, you know, it's because he's like Funchess is obvious.
Kalen Clay.
Yes, that was the 4th I was going to guess. But I mean, the fact that he's your second name off your list is
Brenton Burson.
Yes, of course, Wofford guy.
I want to say Philly Brown, but he's not anymore. Yeah, I can't think of the other ones right now.
Russell Shepard is the fourth. I think technically on their depth chart, Russell Shepard is the starter.
Yes.
Across Devin Funchess, then Burson and Kalen Clay, and then Mos Frazier, who may or may not be Dwight Schrute's brother. So, like Mos Frazier, like, I mean, I knew they'd signed him, but I didn't. When I looked on the depth chart, I had no, like, if you'd asked me, if you'd flipped it and asked me what the five guys were yesterday at this time, I would have had no, I wouldn't have gotten them either.
Yeah, I think that's a big ask. And you know what? I don't know that Mike Shula might be able to name all five of the Carolina wide receivers at the moment. I'm with you. I'm taking the Saints, it sounds like. I do think that it's a tough matchup for them, for Carolina at home. I think it'll be closer than the first two games, but I do think, there's just so many weapons for the Saints, and the defense has played so well when they have their guys on the field that, unless there's an injury to Marshon Lattimore in the first quarter or something, I do think, New Orleans is going to be able to pull that out. All right, well, we're going to come back with our last preview here in a second. But first, I want to talk about our friends at ZipRecruiter. And of course, this is hiring and firing season in the NFL. We just mentioned Mike Mularkey a minute ago. He might be on the market for a new job pretty soon. And the Tennessee Titans, they may be in line for a new head coach. And I would encourage them, if the Titans are listening, to use ZipRecruiter, because ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. You don't have to go through those expensive search firms. You're not going to have to ask an ex-head coach or an ex-general manager to pick a guy for you, because he probably doesn't know what he's talking about anyway. ZipRecruiter posts the jobs everywhere, and then they actively look for the most qualified candidates and invite them to apply. ZipRecruiter does the work for you. And it's no wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. Hey, you know what? They can't fix the Browns. I can't fix the Browns. Nobody can fix the Browns. You can't get 100%, but 80%? That's pretty good. And that's with one day. Tennessee is not going to have to wait for a new head coach. Even better, if you do use ZipRecruiter and use my promo code, which is Barnwell, you will get to post your jobs for free. Tennessee, they've been in the process of being sold for a few years now. You know what? They could use the money. They could save the money. They're one of the cheapest teams in the league. So why pay to post your job? You can post your job for free on ZipRecruiter right now by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. My last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Let's finish up now with the Rams-Falcons. Rams, last time I checked, I'll double check again. The Rams are 6-point favorites. Line is 48. Well, of course, the Rams took week 17 off. They basically sat everyone of importance. Atlanta had to play to get in and did deliver, at least on defense, an impressive performance. The offense was a little inconsistent. But is that a benefit to the Falcons, you think? Or would you rather be the Rams and have that week of rest?
I think it's a benefit to the Falcons in this case.
Interesting.
The momentum thing, I don't. That's what I sort of liked about Jacksonville playing their guys in Week 17 with nothing to play for. That you're a young team, you know, keep the weekly routine going. You know, you're not this veteran team. And the Rams have Tom Brady has more playoff wins than the Rams have as a roster playoff starts.
Oh boy,
21. I mean, that's a can you really sit all of your guys in week 17 and say, all right, you know, you guys have a combined 21 starts, games played in the playoffs. You know how to do this. Get ramped up. Let's get ready for the Falcons coming to town. That feels really difficult. On paper, the Rams are a much better team, but not. I think that to me, this is the game most likely to be close out of all the wild card games, because even though I think the Rams are better, the Falcons are not on paper are not a bad team. They are a very good team on paper with one of the five best wide receivers in the league in Julio Jones. That's probably underselling it. Devonta Freeman is not Todd Gurley, but he is a really good running back.
Yep.
Matt Ryan better than Jared Goff. I don't even know if the stats are comparable, but I mean, if you're picking quarterbacks today, you're taking Matt Ryan. The offensive line for the Rams at this point is probably better because of injury.
Yep.
And defensively, you know, I think you would take the Falcons, although the best defensive player is clearly on the Rams overall, mm-hmm. and Aaron Donald. And that offensive line matchup, I think, makes a huge difference, because if Aaron Donald can terrorize Matt Ryan, this could be a very long day for the Falcons. The line is curious. It is asking you to take the Rams because it's minus six. Mm-hmm. It is notable, I think, Bill, that the over-under was a 51.5.
Yep.
To begin the Westgate, the only line that was over 50 and has since creeped down to 48. That is a substantial drop for two teams that, as we believe, are offensive juggernauts. And it makes me wonder if we couldn't end up seeing a surprisingly low-scoring game between these two teams.
Yeah. That would be really interesting. I do think, and this is going to be tough, like you mentioned, because of the offensive line injuries, Andy Levitre being done for the year for the Falcons, but you would figure, if you're the Falcons, and you think, okay, well, how are we going to win this game? What's our best path to winning this game? It's going to be running the football. It's going to be holding onto the ball. It's going to be long offensive drives, which they excel at. They have some of the longest drives in the league. They are the best third down team in football. They average, I think, more yards on first down in football than anyone but two other teams. They were number one heading into week 17, if I'm not mistaken. And the Rams, I mean, their rush defense is the weakness in their defense. They're 22nd. This year in rush defense DVOA. So you figure, okay, well, we can't block Aaron Donald. He's a monster. Let's just run at him. Let's let him penetrate into the backfield and just run Devontae Freeman past him. Which is, you know, teams have done that before. It's not implausible or impossible for that to happen, but it's tough when you don't have your starting left guard. I mean, you have Alex back. That's going to go a long way in helping with Aaron Donald, but now it's going to be a backup left guard, and that fundamentally changes the effectiveness of that zone running scheme. It's not going to be as impressive. It's Sean Harlow, I believe, a rookie fourth rounder, you figure is going to be the guy who's going to be starting there. So it's really just a difficult situation. Oh, sorry, it's not Sean Harlow. Who's going to be starting for the Falcons at left guard? I don't know. Out of the ready circumstance, it's going to be not Andy Levitre, and that is a major drop-off.
Let's see. Falcons step two. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, and I think that when you talk about, you know, I mean, to me, like, strength on weakness is a thing. It will be Sean Harlow, I think. Right?
You think? I think it'll be Ben Garland, is my guess, the utility lineman for them.
That makes sense. Either way, you were talking about a drop off from Andy Levitre to either Ben Garland or Sean Harlow,
yep,
in a situation where they may or may not be facing Aaron Donald. And yeah, I would caution anyone who's facing Aaron Donald to pray for your life, because he's destroying people. And what is, because the Rams have been so good this season, and because he sat out that first game, and because he's an interior lineman, I think he's the defensive player of the year, but it's a quietly monster season. I mean, he's been killing people all year long, and I don't think that he's going to show up to the playoffs and stop mauling interior linemen. And if you're missing a big piece of your offensive line, that's going to be a problem. You know, Sarkisian and those guys can scheme up all they want, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're sending multiple guys at Aaron Donald, he's still going to break through once or twice, and
yeah,
it's going to create havoc elsewhere. I thought that Mike Sando had a really good point in his he talked to personnel guys around the league to preview the games, and somebody noted that because the Rams play in the NFC West, they've actually faced the Falcons scheme twice this year.
Right? Yeah,
I mean, like,
that's true.
Now, granted, Seattle maybe banged up badly in the second time when they mauled them, and you know, Seattle won the first game, but that's a lot of exposure for those Rams offensive players, and for Sean McVay and for Jared Goff and all of those guys to be able to adjust to whatever Dan Quinn might throw at them.
Yeah, that does help a lot. That's a really good point that I wish I had thought to mention. Now I'm frustrated that you...
Maybe on my own podcast I would have acted like it was my point. Pando comes on your show, so I can't. Reading that column by Mike, it popped out at me that, like, wow, because I think that's sort of an underrated factor sometimes that we miss. Like, when I picked the Rams to beat the Cowboys in Dallas earlier this year, and I made this point before, it's like, you know, Sean McVay is seeing the Cowboys a lot.
Yeah.
Like he's going to have an advantage. I mean, they've seen him too, but he's going to have an advantage, you know, utilizing new personnel and different pieces. And so you wonder, like, especially with the Falcons defense, like how much of the motion. So the Falcons haven't seen the Rams, right? They have, I mean, they haven't seen McVay's Rams. They didn't play, right. Did they? You know?
Yeah. No, they did not play.
I was pretty sure they didn't, but I didn't want to say it. Like an idiot. All the motion and stuff that McVay and the Rams do pre-snap is going to be something that the Falcons are going to have to prepare for, but without having seen it live, and then they're going to have to adjust to it in the course of the game. While the Rams have seen sort of that, how the, like, I feel like they have an advantage in terms of seeing how that defense is going to react, mm-hmm. from a, like a beta standpoint or a test stand, BA, you know, AB testing standpoint, with having played the Seahawks twice, and that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like, you know, if I don't know how accurate this is, but there's that story out there that basically, you know, Jared Goff is a small baby heading to the line of scrimmage, and then Sean McVay reads the defense room and suddenly he knows what he's doing, which I think it's a little less dependent on Sean McVay than perhaps that story might suggest.
I'm sure he's doing the same thing at Washington with Kirk Cousins.
Right. And so, you know, but you would say, if you're going to trick Sean McVay, it's going to be with a defense that's pretty complex. It's going to throw a lot of things into play that are going to throw an offensive coordinator or a quarterback off. Where Falcons, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a Dan Quinn defense. They're going to do what Seattle did. And that's not especially complex at times. And Seattle, you know, at their peak, at their best, they have the athletes. They have the talent. They have the communication to pull that off. But the Falcons, I don't know if they have the ability to pull that off. This is not a team that has been all that impressive on defense this year. And you look at their defensive players, I mean, I don't know anyone on this team, maybe Adrian Claiborne because of that 6-sack game, but I don't know. There's no one on this Falcons defense who I think, wow, this guy took a big leap forward in 2017 versus the guy we saw during the 2016 playoffs.
No, I think that's right. I mean, like, you know, Vic Beasley led the league in sacks last year, and you haven't had that Vic Beasley breakout moment. Deion Jones had that great interception of Drew Brees in the end zone where he got parallel to the ground and snagged it out of the air. But, you know, I mean, Desmond Trufant, yeah, like, I agree with you. There is a lot of, it's weird. It's just like the offense. There's so much talent on both sides of the ball, and it just hasn't clicked. I think that is one reason why you can sort of buy into the idea of the Falcons still making a run, but then you can also envision a scenario where the Rams win 38-3.
Well,
maybe not 3.
Let me throw one idea out there. You mentioned it, you think it's likely this is the closest game of these four playoff games. And if it is, and I think it will be, there is a mismatch for the Falcons, which was not there until the very end of the season. Falcons kicker is Matt Bryant. And the Rams kicker is Sam Ficken, who did not look good when he took over for Greg Zuerlein late in the season. So if this game comes down to a field goal, you would take the Falcons. You would think they would be the better team than the Rams, who, again, if it was Greg Zuerlein, their special teams are the best in football to me. But without Greg Zuerlein, it's a different proposition altogether.
I agree completely, and I think, too, that you know, if you're the Rams, because you play in sunny Southern California and because you're a new franchise to that region, you know, this is not a situation where it's Blair Walsh going into Minnesota, right? Like, late mm-hmm. in the game, you're not gonna literally ice Matt Bryant with either the weather or the home field or the home crowd advantage. Like, there isn't. You know, maybe the Coliseum will be rocking. Good for them if it is. I think that Rams fans are starting to show up more, but I just don't think you're going to get that insane lunatic fringe diehard Rams fan base that, you know, like, pumped up for the playoff game. I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be what, a 10-8? Is this the early game on?
No, it's the night game on Saturday.
Night game on Saturday. Okay, so I mean, it could be pretty raucous, but I mean, you're not going to get the same sort of effect, I don't think, right? I mean, like, it's just not going to be the same as like a stadium that's used to this atmosphere and used to doing this. And you're not going to scare off Matt Bryant. Sam Ficken, you know, it's going to be a little more intense than a trading commodities floor, I think, for Sam Ficken. It's just where it's 2 years ago or 2 weeks ago. And I agree. That's a great point. I think if it comes down to it and it's a close game, I'd much rather have the Falcons. Notably, the line is ticked down to 5.5 at this point and over under at 8. So Maybe it seems like people are leaning towards the Falcons a bit. I think I'm still taking the Rams. I'm going to pick a chalky wild card weekend, and I'm going to allow it to blow up in my face and enjoy the game more.
Well, I think I have to pick one underdog just for funsies, because he can pick four. You could pick four favorites. That works for you. It's probably the correct choice. I'm going to take one underdog. I think of the four, I'm going to go Falcons. I do think that...
To win.
To win outright. Now, again, could I see a game where the Rams win 38-3? Of course. That is not out of the question in the slightest. But I think the Falcons are underrated, especially in offense. Granted, the last 2 weeks have not been great, but I could see a scenario where they do run the ball effectively, do eat a lot of clock, and then, have Matt Ryan, who, I mean, the guy is, their whole team is playoff tested. They've been through a lot. This is a team that emotionally went through a lot in last year's postseason, looked really impressive until the Super Bowl, and looked impressive for, honestly, most of the Super Bowl. Not that the Rams aren't motivated, obviously, but it could be a really interesting, game, and I do think the Falcons have a shot at this one.
I don't disagree. I don't even like my Rams pick, but I'm pot committed. Friday morning, there's nothing.
As of Friday morning. Well, I appreciate that. You are at least backing up your selection. You're not someone who ran from your Super Bowl prediction this year. You are someone who makes a pick and sticks with it.
Both my teams missed the playoffs. But you know what? A lot of people picked the Packers, and a lot of people picked the Patriots, and the Patriots are currently unraveling as we speak, Bill.
That's true. That is a different podcast, though. So we'll get to that another time. But Will Brinson, thank you so much for hopping on the show today. Where can people check out more of your work?
Always a pleasure, Bill. And CBSSports.com, on Twitter at Will Brinson, and the Pick 6 podcast on iTunes.
Cool. Thanks, Will.
Yeah, man.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. We're coming back on Monday. No holidays this week, so back on Monday, recapping the wild card round. So check that out, and more podcasts coming next week.